Morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us on day two. Good to see everyone here bright and early after a late night at the restaurant. So what we'll be talking in this session today is essentially looking at new business models, new revenue streams. So all of our businesses that have launched here, they have their core approach to the market, the core market offering. Your revenue is coming through as really, for most services here, trip revenue. That's your main approach to the market, whether you're billing users by the minute, by the hour, by the day, by the week, by the month, in the case of subscription services. That's how you're first approaching to the market, either at launch or eventually dovetailing into new business models down the road. So what we'll be talking about today is essentially finding those new revenue streams, right? So going beyond that per minute, per hour, per day, per week, per month billing, and finding new ways to bring revenue into your business or potentially hit new KPIs for your business as well outside of just revenue. That might be looking at new target segments, right? So if you're launching with just a direct-to-consumer business model, maybe dovetailing into B2B or looking at a top end of a segment or a younger segment, for example. From a vehicle perspective, looking at new revenue streams from different types of vehicles. If you're a micromobility operator, going into car sharing or vice versa. And even new booking methods, right? So for those subscription services out there, looking at rental, looking at instant access. If you're looking at a free-floating business model, moving more into scheduled booking type business models. So we'll look at talk about those different business models with these panelists here, and then we'll also talk about how they look for those opportunities and successes and failures as we go through. And I think a lot of what Mevo, Eric, and Finn shared, a lot of what you're doing is quite relevant to this conversation as well. So we obviously welcome your input in the conversation and everyone else here. I'd say we start just to make sure we have a refresher of everyone that we have up here on stage. So maybe if you don't mind introducing yourself, the service that you work for, and then we'll get into some questions.
Yeah. My name is Taka. I'm Japanese. I'm from Japan, but coming from Sweden. I'm the managing director of IMO Solutions since 2020, I think. Yeah, so almost 2 years. Yes, and we are operating a free-floating service since 2018, and then we are expanding to the subscription services by utilizing our group company, parking company. Yeah.
And that's all for you. Met a lot of you yesterday, so general manager of Raywon Group, the Vlog Showcase.
Awesome. So we'll start off with a brief introduction into these different business models and different revenue streams. Can you share some, you know, at a high level, you know, you're both free-floating car share operators at the end of the day, but beyond that, can you share a bit more about the different business models that you're approaching? You had mentioned subscription, for example.
Yeah. The reason why we, you know, started subscription is a bit unique, I think. You know, when I came here in 2020, and I was quite, you know, fresh on the mobility services. You know, I am coming from Sumitomo, and I was in charge of different industries. But then, firstly, what I realized is why we have to take 100% utilization risks. Of course, you know, it's great for the customers if we provide, you know, free-floating services. We relocate the car by ourselves and keep the availability for the customers, and the customer can use when they want to use. But is it really we have to do everything by ourselves? That was my first question when I came here, yeah. But then, I thought, if we can let them take utilization risk together with us, yeah. But in order to do so, we have to justify the customer, you know, for the customers to take, you know, utilization risk. And then, like, the car, if the car doesn't move, where is the car? It's parked, you know, it's in the parking. But then, we have the parking company in the group. We can include parking function in the subscriptions. That we can do because one thing is we have the biggest parking operator in Nordic companies within the group. Another thing is the we are operating free flooring service and we set up the around 50 hotspots. Hotspot is general. Right? Yeah, we set up, you know, around more than 50 hotspots of the our, you know, group companies parking facility in Stockholm. But then if we include those, you know, free access to those parking, more than 50 parking facilities into the subscription, then I thought we can justify, you know, and ask them to take utilization risk. Then we started subscriptions since this, at the beginning of this year, and in the 8 months, we have more than 100 subscriptions now. That's, you know, so far a great success.
And those are vehicles that are not part of the general free floating fleet, but these are actually dedicated vehicles for an end
user. Yeah, we give the dedicated car to the customers, and our focus is to be to B customers instead of B to C. Yeah, because B2B is, you know, always better for the, you know, like easy to pay. Yeah. Well, easy to get money, you know, instead of B2C.
Is it more secure?
Yeah.
How about yourself? Yeah. Various business models?
Well, we're still very young, so this is 1 year old, so still learning, but what we wanted to do at the beginning was to start very simple, so only free floating, instant access, travel cars, and then understand the extra needs from the customer. And I think any thing we have added so far and anything we'll add in the future will always be based on the need we have identified. Yesterday we talked about schedule trip. This is because we had feedback from customers. Even though we have 300 cars in a 50 kilometer square home zone, which is quite set speed, but they wanted to ensure availability. So we went for this schedule trip functionality. Another example is this summer. We were very, very surprised, and it was a good surprise to see customers willing to rent cars basically of our fleet. Keep the car for days or even weeks, and we have some rental for in free floating mode, but for weeks until a month. So we said, oh, maybe there is a need. So now we are also looking, considering this subscription option. We feel there is a need. We know car rental companies are struggling to provide vehicles. We know that prices is increasing. So we said, okay, we have fleet. Our strength is that we have 300 vehicles. So how do we maximize utilization? Maybe one option is just to give the car for a month to our customer. So that's one of the new needs we have identified. And maybe something else is B2B, so that's something we want to push, of course. And there is doing B2B by renting our fleet, our cars, but we also felt the need from large companies to optimize their fleet. They have a pool of cars, and now things are changing with COVID, more people being in home office, so the utilization rate of their fleet is going lower and lower, so the cost is still the same, but it's not so efficient. So the discussion we had with those companies was how do we help you to improve your fleet efficiency, and one of the projects we work on at the moment is to provide the technology to those companies. For them to be able to share their fleet internally, you know, rather than having this guy who keeps all the keys of the 100 cars of the company and never really knows where the key is, and the guy should have come back yesterday with the car at 5 p.m. but he's late, so the next guy who should take the car is struggling. So all this complexity we can get rid of it by a digital solution, which is just providing the tech. And the result for the company will be that they can get rid of part of the fleet. And here we are talking about cars, but we also see things beyond cars. Car is not the only option now to move, and we are also considering to help them equip e-bikes, for example, or scooters. So to have multimodal fleet within the company, shared with modern fleet that would make also a lot of sense. So now we when we have this kind of discussion with large companies, we more think about the needs, say, okay, what's the type of movements that your employees need to do, and not all of them will be fulfilled by car. Maybe you need e-bikes for those ones. So it's just to define the best composition of the fleet for our company. So we provide our experience, but we also provide the technology and the sharing. And as a result, we'll end up with one company having the Leonardo app, and in the app they will see our free floating fleet, which is shared fleet, public fleet, but also their private fleet, which they will be the only one to access to. And of course, the aim is to develop B2B, but for the B2B customer to use our core fleet as well. So B2B can also be a good option to go multimodal, and that we think that it will become a big part of our business in the future.
Right. So we have a free-floating car sharing operator getting into subscription services and some focus on the B2B segment as well. And similarly, free-floating operator with the schedule a trip functionality, giving that, you know, the similar guarantee that a car rental option has, and also looking at the B2B segment as well. So that's today, that's where we currently stand now. I mean, I know that we're about a year in with Leo and Go. Anil has a bit of a more storied history. Are you open to sharing any business models that you've looked into that haven't worked out, that haven't gotten past the pilot stage?
Yeah, we are now focusing on the, like, similar to subscription, but the subscription means, as he explained, you know, we give dedicated car to the companies, and within the company, the car can be shared with the employees, or put the car on the apartment, and the car can be shared with, you know, residents of the apartment. And what we are trying to do together with parking, you know, sister company, is that approaching the real estate companies, because still, you know, in Stockholm, there are several plans to develop the smart city on the suburbs of the Stockholm. And then the real estate company, you know, when you establish or when you develop the city, then you need parking. But then real estate company needs to approach the parking company before they finish the plan, making plan. Because when you develop the city, the first step what you have to think first is the, you know, how to and where to set up the parking. And that's the reason why we can get the information more in advance compared with the other, you know, companies. But then we can propose, like, you know, together with the parking, we can put the car sharing services for the, you know, limited, like, how to say, communities. That's what we are doing, and we have, I think, 2-3 discussion is running, but it's quite long, you know. The development is finished in 2015 or something like this. I don't know, you know, who are responsible for car sharing and where we are, but those are now, you know, also we are doing together with the sister company.
For yourself, Vincent, any pilots that you guys have looked into, any you know, that you might have averted even before you went down that road, or?
Yeah. One that we currently have is a partnership with a business school. For this business school has a strong commitment for environment, so they want to change the way people move. So when it's digital stuff, they usually come to the airport and take a Uber to the school, and that's not very efficient in terms of cost and in terms of course, CO2. They also want their students to move in a more friendly way. And what we are testing at the moment, and we don't have the outcome yet, is in this partnership, we have dedicated parking within the school. So the big asset is that the school gives us a lot of visibility. They are communicating a lot to students, to the staff members on the Leo and Go service, so that really helps. And we know that the kind of people who don't have a car, so that's really our target. Now, what we have to manage is our fleet, that we can have guarantee some vehicles in this parking, but it's private parking. So what happens during weekends? Not so much. Weekdays it works well because students are moving, but during weekends they are not here anymore. So it's a good example of partnership that can drive more revenue to the service, but we need to be cautious not to have our cars within barriers, not moving anymore. So that's one example. And another example that is related to parking is when we approach companies, for example, when they want to go to the central station, the train station in Lyon, they are looking for parking solutions. You don't want to take the risk in free floating to just find your spot, and then if you don't find it, you'll just miss your train. So what we have been struggling with was to guarantee the parking space availability. So now we are working to identify partners that can make the experience more easy, and we are sure our customers would be ready to pay extra for this parking. 1 minute costs 30 cents, so if you just spend 20 minutes finding a parking spot, on top of all the stress and the risk it generates, there is also cost associated. So we think there would be added value, and we would love to have the same network AMO has. So if you have some garage or stuff in France, in Lyon, we're happy to take that.
So we've got our core business models, the trip revenue that we're really building the base of our business around. When you are looking to differentiate your business model, when you're looking to get into new segments, find new revenue streams, how are you going about doing that? Are you taking a methodical approach, a data-driven approach? You know, from our friends at Mevo, we've really seen a lot of deep analysis into customer segments, how users are using the service, and then building products around that. So are you looking at it from an analytical perspective based on feedback from customers? Vincent, you want to start?
Yep. Well, I think there are, of course, analytics that help us better understand usage. And the example from Mevo was very good, with a good segmentation, different kinds of trips. So we have it. Something that works, too, we get a lot of feedback from the customer support, and we also create events to meet our users, to collect those feedbacks. Because as it's all digital, the feedbacks will not always come. The good feedbacks will never come, for sure, the bad ones sometimes. But we really need to have engagement sessions with our users, where they bring new needs, and this is the good source for innovation for us. That's what we use.
Right, you have a pulse on the member experience, so you can hear it directly from them.
Yeah, and we of course try to get various members. We do not only want champions, and I would even say maybe that's not the champions we want. That's the guys who do not use enough, and we need to understand why they don't, and maybe it's because we don't answer their needs.
Taka?
Yeah, I think around one year ago, we set up the close community on the Facebook just to invite loyal customers. I think it's around 50 customers we invited, and to communicate directly. And yeah, it's good pros and cons, of course. You know, sometimes, or a lot of times, the voice from customers are really good for us to learn, you know, how they are feeling. But sometimes, of course, you know, it's not, doesn't want to reply anything, you know, just let it go. But yeah, then you know, from the voice from the customers, we you know deployed some new product for free floating, like called weekday pass. You know, during weekdays, I think everyone has the same situation. But the, you know, in the morning time and evening time, you know, there is a you know high trip. But during the week working hours, especially if the business is for B2C, the utilization is quite low. But to secure that, you know, the customer wants, how to say, yeah, hearing from the customers, and we did, they, you know, we started like fixed fee, monthly fixed fee, but customer can use 2 trips in a day. Yeah, then the price set, if customer wants 2 trips for 5 days in a month, well, then they can, you know, enjoy more trips than the payments. That's we, you know, do it from the based on, like, you know, from the communication with the customers. But those kind of things we are doing. And another thing is like data analysis. So we have, you know, 3 years trip data. And we have, you know, data scientists in Tokyo, our owners. But then, you know, I think because of several GDPR issues, we cannot share all the information, but we give them some information just to make analysis and then, you know, plot the, like, number of trips within the home zones and the revenues, and then define where is, you know, the demand. But then also, you know, because of like shifting subscriptions, and we have limited cars, that's the reason why, you know, the number of cars allocated for subscription is getting lower and lower. Then utilizing this data analysis, we adjust the home zone and setting up new hotspot based on the, you know, potential demand and so on. Those activities we are doing. And then utilization for free floating also can be what has been improved. Yeah, that's good. But of course, you know, we focus somewhere in the home zone, then less focus in somewhere. But then the customer from those area starts saying something, you know. That's always we have to deal with, of course.
So we've gotten, you know, it sounds like you have a bit of a broader team in Tokyo, as you mentioned, that is actually able to dig deep into this data, find trends, and pull forward opportunities, which is great. And you also have partners in the parking space that can help feed those. But I really like the idea of having that, you said it, actually a closed group on Facebook, or a way to engage members, hear directly from them, whether it's out in the field at events, whether it's digitally, through a community of loyal members, to be able to gather that feedback, take it, iterate on it, and test it. Any examples from the crowd in terms of engaging your members in a more refined environment? No? All good? So we have the data, we know potential business models that we can go down that road. Now, in terms of looking at different, if we're looking at iterating from a vehicle perspective, so looking at adding new vehicle types, maybe we're a micromobility operator adding cars, looking at new business models, so starting from free-floating, booking methods, so starting from free-floating, testing scheduled booking, or even looking at new target segments, starting from university students and expanding into B2B or vice versa, or starting from direct-to-consumer and testing the B2B segment. What would you say is the simplest way to fail early? To try something small, do a pilot? In any of those segments, is there any particular success stories or any ways that you've been able to just pilot something small, find the learnings, and then move on?
One thing we don't have yet, in Leongo is the diversity of vehicles, and when we look at Miro, it's of course very inspiring, but we need to put the right vehicle in front of the need. And one request we had from day one was for vans from customer. So we have from time to time customer asking for vans when they need to move from one place or move heavy stuff. But what we thought was, okay, in free floating, does it make sense to add 5 vans to our fleet? They would be probably spread across the home zone, on, not at the right location. So it's not only for us, so there is a need, it's identified, we need to quantify the need, because it's not because you have 10 feedbacks from customers that there is a real demand. So what we will use in this case is to select part of our audience and ask the question, would you be interested in such offer? Would you be interested in such offer at this price, such vehicle model, to make sure there is a market behind. And then, of course, we'll always start small. So one option would be to start with a few number of vehicles, and maybe not on the 314 mode. So we can think about tactical offers, but for vans, either we deliver at the right location or we go for scheduled booking. People would be ready to go to the central station and pick up their vehicle because it's a very particular model. It's not a Yaris or it's not the Ego8 or Volkswagen or those kind of stuff. So it's just designing the right offer, but it's not only designing, thinking about the vehicle price, it's also thinking about the access to the offer for the customer and what makes sense for them. And before going big, for sure tomorrow we won't order 50 vans, put them in 314, that would be the worst idea. We need to start always small.
Right, and I guess if you're innovating from a vehicle perspective, obviously vehicle supply chain, going to take you much longer, there's going to be a higher risk of investment without potentially recouping that investment. Whereas if you're looking at new segments, right, targeting just with the same vehicles, with the same booking method, a new group of users, you can innovate, you can try it out, you can see how they're receptive to that market.
The same thing for the long trips or trips with your family. When we launched Everyone Go, of course we had some ideas of the type of trips that would be made, but we are positively surprised by the length of the trip. People that go on holidays with the car. So now we know there is a demand. So our poor customers are still struggling with like three kids in the Yaris, the luggage, but they are happy with that so far. But we know if we want to develop this segment, maybe we need to go with at some point bigger cars. But at least we have the proof that there is a market behind. That's the key thing.
Doctor, for yourself, any example of small pilots that you've been able to deploy or that you consider?
Yes, small pilot. Yeah, I would say, you know, free floating is still like, you know, the big pilot. Yeah, what I experienced is as I said, you know, when I came to IMO, so number of hotspot was around, I think, less than 10. Then I increased up to, you know, 50 together with parking company. But then I saw the customer can easily to access, you know, parking when we set up the hotspot. But in reality, it didn't, you know, because there are several, you know, reasons why customer, I'd say, it's not easy to access to the garages because of some, you know, the gate is so small, or, you know, like you need to go down to, you know, underground and difficult to find this signage and those kind of reasons. Then, you know, how to say, it might be not the pilot, but then the number of usage of the hotspot or access to the garages didn't increase at the first, I think, 2-3 months as we expected. You know, I didn't expect. Then, like, you know, setting up close communities and check why they don't want to use parking garages. And also looking at the, you know, data, lots of customers, you know, end the trip just next to the hotspot, but on street, you know, within the home zone. But then, I don't know if it's good way or bad way, but we take away the home zones, like, you know, each 100 meters from the hotspot. But then, so we force them, you know, in bad world, I think, you know, it forces them to go to the garages. That's, of course, you know, it's not good for the customers, but in one aspect, it's good for the customers because always there is some voice from the customers that they need to find the parking space on street, and it takes, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes sometimes, but we keep charging them. But if there is, you know, parking garage, they can go straight, you know, to the garages, and always there's a space in the garages. That's why, you know, trip duration can be shorter or can be, you know, optimized. Those kind of, yeah, of course, you know, just both, you know, pros and cons.
Yeah,
But that's like always pilot.
And when you're deploying these pilots, is it with a closed group of users, like with those power users that you had identified, or are you open and willing to test it across the broader market?
It depends. Sometimes we only, you know, announce to the closed communities first, but then, you know, having the feedback, then before, you know, releasing officially, that we do sometimes. But sometimes if we are confident, so, you know, before asking anything to this loyal customers, we do announce to the
I think including part of our customer base into pilots also helps to engage them. But that's something we notice they want. They want to test new functionalities, new features. And when you are asked by the operators and, oh, you've been selected to help us collect feedback on this feature and test it, then they feel even more engaged. So that's also a tool that we can use.
Right, it can be a user engagement tool for your power users. So outside of just driving new revenue streams, so finding new ways to build your balance sheet, is there any other KPIs that you're looking at when you're looking at new booking models, new vehicle types? Are you looking at, say, operational costs, improving member experience, employee engagement? Is there any other KPIs that you're looking at outside of just dollars coming in that are going to help improve your business for the long term?
I think it's important to have a segmentation between the different parts of our business model. If we take, for example, the airport on our side, of course, the airport costs more to operate there, with higher parking fees, but we consider the airport as kind of a service in itself and see if we are profitable on this segment. So, same if tomorrow we launch it, and I think it's the case for you, with subscription, you want to be profitable on this segment. So, of course, we'll always look at the money, the revenue, and the profit, but we need to understand what's the most profitable segment of our activity. And then what we also look at is the customer satisfaction. That's very key of one type of service. Because even if we have a segment that generates lower profit or lower revenue, but the customer are very happy with that, fulfill the need, maybe then they will use other segments. And that's the case with the Tesla in Mevo. We attract the customer with very satisfying experience, and then they just end up in the Polo. So, but maybe the most profitable segment, we do not only need very, very profitable segments, we also need very attractive, very satisfying segments to have our customers moving to other segments. And those ones, we know they are profitable, you know, there are big volumes behind. So I think that's the setup.
Yeah, I think it's same, you know. In our case, we have 260 cars only for both, you know, free floating and subscription, which means if we have more subscriptions, less cars for free floating. But in, you know, the free floating is quite important for us to, you know, attract the customers and the, you know, provide the, you know, better service and keep improving to everything, you know, like as I said, you know, the free floating is always like a pilot, you know, we can make a try and error easily, and if it's not good, we can stop immediately, and if it's good, we can, you know, keep doing, and we can deploy new, you know, new product for free floating and so on. But those can be, you know, utilized for subscriptions. So that's the reason why. How to find the best balance between free floating and subscription? Of course, now we are trying to, you know, procure more cars, but it takes time, you know, because of current EV, you know, situation. So for the time being, anyway, we have to find the best mix or best balance between free floating and subscription.
And I would imagine that with subscription, you have, you know, those auxiliary benefits of less touch points on the vehicle, you know, less cleaning, potentially less damages because someone has that vehicle for a long period of time, they're taking better care of it versus a short inner city trip where they just might leave it anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. But on the other hand, it's also quite difficult to operate. What we realize now is the, you know, in case of subscription, we, you know, the customer go away from Stockholm easily, and then, for example, you know, go to the Gothenburg or Malmö by our subscriptions, then they have some technical trouble, for example. It's quite tough for us to replace the car. But if it's free floating, it's easy, you know, we can, you know, give the customer to the another car, you know, close to them. A subscriptions case, we need to go there, or we need to ask the customer to go to the workshop, closest workshop. But in that case, they need a replacement, then we need to give the car to, you know, them. So those kind of, yeah, new challenges also we are facing. It's a different operation than free floating. It's quite close, but it's a different, I think. So we need the, you know, like, different narratives on that.
And I think in addition to those added benefits, I mean, if you look at something like the B2B segment, it's going to drive, yes, increased utilization Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, right? So it's going to help smooth out your demand curve. But there's also benefits from an operational perspective. Vehicles that are being driven by corporate employees are likely being taken better care of. They're a bit more experienced in driving. They're going to have less damages. And if the vehicle is in the hands of another business, for example, again, that business has a bit of a hand in taking care of the vehicle.
But it's also a challenge to share the same vehicle between 18-year-old students that would have used it on Saturday night, and then the B2B guy comes on Monday morning to go to the airport. So, and that's something we need to be very cautious about. And for example, when we have B2B pre-booking in Neuengo, we pay particular attention. We do not just allocate the car that is next to the location with that. We bring the car and we make sure it's clean. And that's that stuff to, if the same fleet have a various type of profile of customers, that's something we should consider.
Right, you need to consider the, yes, there's auxiliary benefits, but there's also potential negatives to build into those.
In fact, I can maybe share here, we're talking about additional revenues, so it's by the use of the fleet, but we have found few ways to increase also revenue. For example, in a couple of weeks, there is a big event in Lyon, where they don't know how to protect the area, you know, from this kind of trucks that would come and do something very nasty, like it happened in a couple of years ago. So they need to protect the area, and they were looking for material to protect it. So what we'll do is happening at night, so we know at night the utilization of the fleet is low. We'll just provide cars just to make some barriers all across the area. So they will be full of Leo&Go. So everyone that will come to the event will go through the Leo&Go wall. We'll have people flying around, so we'll take advantage of this event. They will not pay us to put the car in the streets, but anyway, the cars would have stayed in the streets without being used at that time. But we give a lot of visibility to the service. So that's the kind of nice thing we do, and we try to optimize the use of our assets. And now something we go more into is to use the car as a visibility tool for partners. So we start to do some light, still light, but car covering. And that's really something we can sell. And for example, when we do it with ski resorts for winter, we just make sure we really put like snow and ski on the design to make sure they have to change it for summer, you know. So they have to start new campaigns again and again. And for us, it's of course additional source of revenue. There is very low cost associated. We just need to make sure we don't bother our users, and of course we wouldn't go for an advertisement for Coca-Cola. That's not what we do. We do advertisement for this location where you will go with where you want to go. But that's something that brings net additional revenue without any risk, and it's not really linked to the usage of the car, but it's more related to having 300 cars in a big city that can provide a lot of visibility. So for us, we hope it will help the path to profitability as well.
Now, is that, would you say that is a, because you run the risk that, yes, you have these assets out in the field, you have revenue being generated by trips and by potentially other business models as well. Is there a risk of being distracted by trying to generate revenue outside of your traditional business line? So a good example is, you know, you mentioned Leo Spots. in the past. And I know, you know, Evo has done this as well with bringing partners more into your ecosystem and encouraging users to drive to different locations around the city. Is that, do you see that as a true revenue stream, something that your business can focus on, or is it just a customer experience enhancement?
Again, I think it's it may be very one-off. So for example, when we partner with a music festival, we know it's only happening over a weekend, so we generate an amount of trips, but it's not something permanent. However, the customers will try the service, and we know that the big challenge is to have customers sitting in our cars. We know that the loyalty is good because the experience is good. It's just to do customer acquisition. So that's the kind of good partnerships we put in place. One, there are some risks sometimes. If I get back to the car covering example, we wanted to go bigger, so we put a big design on the back of the car, but it was hiding visibility for our customers. So we had some very negative feedbacks around that, saying, oh, but I don't want to drive like a publicity car, and especially if we think back about our corporate guy who goes to the big meeting and comes with the car, we've covered, and that's covered everywhere. So we should be cautious as well, trying to develop additional revenue, not to jeopardize the core business, that's fleet utilization and user experience.
Talk, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure if I this is my, you know, if this is correct answer to your questions, but everyone starts thinking same thing, you know, same directions, like, you know, car sharing operators, rental companies, leasing companies. The border between the product will not be, you know, will disappear in the coming future, you know, in the near future, because rental companies start, you know, providing more longer rentals, and leasing companies start providing more short lease. And like us, you know, we are trying providing the longer, you know, trips like subscriptions. But then how to differentiate among those, you know, competitors with those competitors, that's always we, you know, keep thinking. We need to think, you know. Yeah, and how to attract the customers always, and how to retain the customers. Because the customer, you know, downloads lots of, you know, services, apps, you know. In our case, most of the customers, I think more than half of the customers download or register our service and the Kintos and Volvo Ens, you know, Volvo is operating also station-based car sharing in Sweden. But then, if they want to, you know, go like use like A to B, then they use our service. If it's round trip, then they use Kinto, for example.
Yeah.
So like this, so we have to give, how to say, the right product to the customers to differentiate from the others. Also, we need to always give the clear message to the customers about the, you know, like benefit for them to use our service compared with others. That's always, you know, I think big challenges. Yeah.
I would say the last question before we open it up to any questions. Seasonality naturally exists in a lot of these businesses. We might be busier in September when university is back to school, for example. We might be slow Monday to Friday. So looking at ways to smooth out that demand curve and improve utilization of our vehicles across the entire fleet. So do you have any examples of seasonality in your business? And different business models, different approaches to the market, maybe new vehicle types, booking methods, anything like that, that have helped to smooth out that demand curve, maybe talk about. So,
seasonality in Sweden, I think it's a big challenge compared with the others, you know. Short summer, long winter, maybe already winter is started in Sweden, you know, from September. It's too cold already, yeah. Yeah. But then, what's happened is the summertime is really good, but like since November, for example, you know, it's getting dark and dark, lots of rain, snows, people doesn't go outside, then utilization, you know, always getting lower and lower. Then what we do is we bring tankers to the ski resort to up north, you know, during the winter time. But surprisingly, that tankers could generate the profit from the beginning. That's quite interesting, you know, quite high utilization rate. That's because, you know, they are going there by train or by airplanes, that we put the cars at the airport of that local cities and central stations and give, like, you know, scheduled bookings. But then people start using for 7 days, what, you know, 14 days. Unfortunately, in those ski resorts, you know, most of those, you know, parking facilities, you know, of that ski resort, even in the airport parking, central stations parking, hotel parking, ski resort parking, are operated by our group company. So customer can access, you know, a customer doesn't take care of any parking fee or parking fine. So they can go anywhere to park a car free of charge if they use our service, or from the airport or from central station. But then utilization was quite high, and that was really profitable business for us. But then summer ends, no one uses. Winter ends, so no one uses. Then we have to bring back a car to Stockholm.
That's a
good trial.
So you're almost moving vehicles geographically to follow demand.
Yeah, it's not easy.
But we do have a lot of clients here that have, you know, they're in seasonal businesses. You can move vehicles around your market to address demand in certain locations. So I think that's quite relevant for a lot of people here.
For us, in terms of seasonality, thankfully we are more at the south, so we don't have to move the cars. That's good. But what we noticed at the beginning of the service was that the peak of activity was over weekends, so we were more meeting the need for leisure trips. And we have 30-40% more trips over the weekend than we have during weekdays, especially beginning of the week. Monday, Tuesday were very calm. So, of course, what we thought was, okay, how can we fill the gap and make sure that the fleet is used during this time? What we tried to do, at the beginning we thought, okay, but why do the guys use it on weekend and they don't use it on Monday? So we just tried to do some campaigns saying, okay, hey, you use it on weekend, you have a discount if you use it on Monday. So you have a very short window to use the service on Monday. Or we tried to offer discounts to our customer base if they use it on Monday, no matter they had used it on the weekend or on the weekend before. This worked a bit, but not so much, because it's not, again, not because we offer 2, 3, 5 euro discount, but the guy will take the car on Monday if he doesn't need it. So we just need to find the people who need the car on Monday. So we thought, okay, who are they? They are the B2B guys, for sure. They need the car on Monday. It's just that at the moment, they probably use Uber or taxi or other stuff. So how do we transition those guys? And that's the idea of developing the B2B. We also have students. Students will move over the week. They will move more in the second part of the week when they start to go to some amusement parties or stuff. But they also have needs at the beginning of the week. So then with those audiences that we identify, we work on acquisition of this audience. And that's how I think we'll manage to fill the gap. But of course it's sad to see our fleet being well dimensioned for weekends, very high utilization rate. But on Monday, when it's much more calm, we know we have assets that are not bringing any revenue. So we need to fill the gap. And we have this seasonality across the week, so between weekdays and weekends. We also have seasonality. So we have 1 year of experience, so we start to see some seasonality. And as we have a lot of customers using the service for leisure trips, the months since spring have been very good. But we also think that the demand will drop a little bit naturally as of winter. But again, we guys still drive in Meetup, so that's part of the answer too. But of course, it's not the same type of usage across the year and across the week, and we want the activity to be as linear as possible. In terms of ops, for us, it's also hard to manage, because when you have 40% more utilization over a weekend, it means a big peak of tasks being created, of tickets, so you need more guys also over the weekend. And it's always easier to scale a team to manage a linear activity rather than having few guys over the week and recruiting like temporary guys to manage your peak of activity during the weekend. So of course we would all love to have a very linear activity, but very high level, so that's what we aim at.
It's interesting to look at B2B as essentially a tool to, like, yes, you have weekly seasonality, let's call it that, fluctuations in your utilization. You're busy with B2C over the weekends, so the B2B segment can help you fill the middle of that week. But also from across an annual basis, right? You're going to have more leisure trips from the direct-to-consumer market in the summer months as people are traveling more. And then B2B will likely be a bit quiet in the winter. Or sorry, in the summer, but yeah, into the winter, you're going to have a lot more consistency.
You know, for example, something we also work on for winter is holidays. How do we help people going to ski? So we want them to use our cars, and so we provide snow chains, we provide all the equipment that is needed to get there, but it also grows the demand for winter. So we take advantage of the snow as well, not to cost. Being in like 150 kilometers from the mountains, that's something we should leverage.
So maybe one last thought before we open it up for any questions. We didn't talk too much about different vehicle types or different vehicle methods. Obviously, we have a lot of car sharing operators here that may have an opportunity to bring in light electric vehicles into their services, or vice versa, light electric vehicle operators that see an opportunity to bring passenger vehicles into their business. Any examples of that in your services? I know, Vincent, we had talked before about some e-bike pilots that you've tested. Do you see micromobility as a core revenue stream for Leo and Go, or is it an enabler for the rest of your business?
Well, when I spoke about micromobility, it was very targeted for B2B as a private fleet. I think, anyway, it's complementary. It really depends on how the city shapes the thing. So, for example, in Lyon, the city will make tenders for micro-mobility operators, for car sharing operators, all this kind of stuff. And we look at the profile of our users. The car sharing user is using more than average micro-mobility, for example. So, of course, there are links. We try more to link with existing micro-mobility operators, so we did some operations with our friends of Dot who are there today, operating in Lyon, just to promote multimodality. So if you are riding a Dot, then you have some advantage on Lyon Go, or vice versa, so that really helps. But for us, our focus remains at the moment really, in terms of public service, remains the car sharing. But we also want to give ideas. For example, we propose our user to rent e-bikes that we don't have in the moment in Lyon. There are no free-floating e-bikes in Lyon. So we propose to our customer an option to take e-bikes with them when they go. So we come back to the Toyota Yaris thing. How do you fit two e-bikes in a Toyota Yaris? That works, but it's not very convenient. But it's just to show that it's two complementary ways of transportation.
So you're actually offering e-bikes along with the rental.
Yeah, we're renting e-bikes for a partner, so you pay for the car, but you also pay for the e-bike, but then it comes with the whole package, and then we combine that with the Leo spot. We say, oh, but there is a nice area where you can go by car and make the tour of the lake with e-bike. So we give the ID, and we give all the stuff, and the car is pre-booked, so it comes with the e-bikes inside, you just have to drive to the location. So that's what we do. We also partner with the bike sharing company that is not electric, but to have links between all those audiences. And again, we know that the guy who is used to drive like share mobility, bike, scooter, or whatever, will likely be a Leo and Go customer too. So that's what we, it's more that we use the micro mobility as an audience that we target to use our car sharing service.
Yeah, I think it's same. You know, we are now trying to deploy e-bikes, but not for free floating, but as the added value of the car sharing. What we are doing, trying to do is the, like, you know, subscription type car sharing and e-bikes for the closed, you know, customers. Like, there are several, you know, project running now is when the property owners or real estate companies built the apartment, but then there is a huge demand from them to put car sharing and e-bikes together. But then we are approaching together with parking company to get parking, you know, operations, car sharing, e-bikes. But then all of them, we can offer the package. That's, no one can do it, you know. That's a, you know, big advantage for us, and that attracts the lots of property owners, landlords, to, and we already, you know, get similar businesses in coming years. So that's the reason why we need to deploy e-bikes. But
and you see these e-bikes as an entirely new revenue stream for AMO in the future, or is it really just, again, a way to get yourself in with...
Yeah, if we want to grow one of the, you know, revenue stream from e-bikes, you need, I think, more than 1,000, 2,000 e-bikes, but I don't think we will have those levels. But at least as a, you know, supplement, as added value of the car sharing business, car sharing and subscription is always our core business. Yeah, that's what revenue streams. But to maximize this revenue, we need to add e-bikes.
Yeah, to pull new users in. Okay. So, any questions for our panelists? Yeah.
Just out of interest, because yesterday we heard about our top customer that was 40 plus and less risky, whereas you're not focusing on students, especially on a Saturday night. And we know that drunk driving can be quite a big risk. In micromobility, there's been like 13% of the accidents that have been proven under influence of alcohol. So how do you control this, especially with this user segment?
Well, I can start. As part of the registration, we ask the drink, not talking. I think we do have the issue sometimes. What we can do is try to educate our users. So we just display some messages around alcohol, so that things that can help. We had an interesting thing. A few weeks ago, we had partnered with music festival close to Lyon, and we had lots of users that wanted to go to the festival with Lyon and go because it was the best option to get there. But then they were struggling to come back, of course. So we had lots of users sleeping in the cars, waiting there just to be not drunk anymore and be able to drive again. But I can imagine that some drove drunk, but that's not something we want. Then the good thing we have with car sharing is this is obviously punished by law. So same as if you rent a car, you are responsible to drive it safely without being drunk, which I think is a bit different with micromobility, which is much younger. And like, of course, now we know we shouldn't drive drunk, but if you drive a kick scooter being drunk, will you really be arrested by the police? If it happens with a car, you know it was. At the end, at the exit of the festival, there were policemen everywhere and they were controlling everyone, which is not happening so much. So I think, thankfully, we have this regulation that helps on cars. There have been a lot more advertisement from the government, from everyone, and you should not drive a car if you are drunk. And there has been less on micro-mobility. No one said, don't drive a bike if you're drunk, or more few people. Which I think is not normal, because the normal way now, if you can't drive because you're drunk, is, oh, but I will just take a bike. Which is not safer at all, but that's what people do, actually. So, we just send you our drunk customer. You know. But in 1 year of Lyon Go, we didn't have any like serious accidents, and the accidents we had were not driven by hardcore. It was more driven by weather conditions or speed or this kind of stuff. But thankfully, it didn't happen. We also track trips at night, and we track trips at night based on the speed. So we look, of course, we cannot know if the customer is drunk, but we look carefully at the speed, and we sometimes have cars going way too fast in the city center, so that's an abnormal usage. And of course, we get in touch with the customer and get rid of this customer if we have it. So the data from the trip really, really helps.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was thinking, but we don't have almost no issues because of those drunk customers, right, Martin?
Give him the thumbs up.
Yeah, that I think that's because of maybe, yeah, you know, mobility services quite local businesses, and it depends on the, you know, let's say people living there. And that good surprise for me is Swedish people are so educated and polite people. Our customers, if there's accident, for example, we can easily identify who, you know, makes accident. We, you know, that's a good surprise for me. You know. And then they are communicating in a polite way, and they are making, you know, action report immediately by themselves in the right way. So that's, you know, I think good country to operate car sharing.
Yeah. It would be rude to drive drunk. it's a good problem to have. It's good. Any other questions? Yeah.
As a form of additional revenue, are you guys also generating or doing new revenue stream through sales of gift packs, of vouchers, you know, through platforms? I give you an example like Shopify, Lazada, Shopee, because these are very good platforms for, especially when you have a younger population where the parents do gifting, you know, where the parents pay for the vouchers and to be used by the children.
Gift certificates,
yes.
Kind of things.
Yes.
Like, can you just rephrase for it? Not sure.
So I give you an example. So typically, you can sell, you know, in terms of X value of vouchers, or you can sell in terms of X hours of vouchers that could be bought as a gift to be given to your member. So these vouchers, of course, if you make people go to your website or your portal to sell, you need to be able to support that functionality. But if you partner in with e-platform, typically, I don't know what's the famous platform here, but like Atomy or Shopback or, you know, Lazada, Shopee and all, you know, I think Shopee, Lazada is not so big here. I don't know what's the big Shopee,
yeah,
e-marketing.
Amazon,
yeah, exactly. Or Prime, you know, for example, then you will be able, it will become a main product by itself where people don't wait for seasonality to do gifts. So it can be a monthly thing, okay, to give you pocket money as part of a transport allowance. I buy you this mobility voucher that you can use at Leo and Go or wherever.
Yeah. So I actually thought about that last Christmas,
yeah.
To do this for this nice Christmas gift that I think you're doing.
Yeah, we've done it for many years. We do it for Shopify. We sell it at Christmas, we do a stocking stuffer. So you give away 10, it's, we don't discount it very much. It's only like 2% off. But people love the idea of being able to give somebody 25 minutes.
Exactly.
Right? And so we sell thousands of these at Christmas over 1 month to give away, and you can even buy for yourself if you want.
Yeah, and I think what's the most important thing is the people who are buying these don't have to be the user themselves.
Yeah.
It can be anyone.
Yeah. And all it's always is it's a unique promo code.
Yeah.
On this whole stock is that where you enter.
We made for companies.
Yeah.
So they buy for business, they buy like watches for their employees and they.
So you just need to ensure there is a single-use voucher so that they don't repeatedly use. So that's why the ability to generate single-use promotional vouchers, you know, is important.
Yeah. You know, in France, on your end, a lot of companies are offering some gifts to their employees and so on. And so this is something that we are thinking about for Leongo, is to provide this service to companies so that instead of offering, stupid things that are not really worth it, offering something that makes sense. So
and that's really on an ongoing basis. Like you said, that really helps with seasonality, bringing people in at any time of year
so
for
you,
birthdays.
You can sell membership acquisition. You can sell membership as well, and you don't need to promote anything. It will go by itself. So you can sell vouchers. You can sell memberships. So like for us, we if you go on Shopee, you can find Blue SG. So the membership just sell by itself. You don't have to do anything. But of course, you have to give a percentage commission to the platform. But it's peanuts.
And you've seen the ride hail companies do this as well, where they're targeting not on an ongoing basis, but on a per event basis. So as an event organizer, you can buy Uber or Lyft, for example, vouchers for your attendees, or if you're hosting a wedding, rather than having a shuttle service, buying credits for these services and offering them to your attendees. Obviously, if we're looking at it from a free-floating business model, you need to consider the logistics of getting a fleet of vehicles to go and support that demand that's going to be coming from that location, but in a similar concept.
I think we all agree that B2B is extremely important in order to increase the utilization rate during weekdays. And I think a lot of you guys are trying to get into B2B. Not that many car sharing operators are actually very successful getting into B2B, because I don't think we've cracked it yet really well, and we don't really understand how to push B2B offering to companies. So I would be really interesting to understand what you guys think of that and what is working on your end. I know that what AIMO is doing in Sweden, and you spent quite some time working on B2B, but I think now you are pretty successful on B2B.
Yeah, 90% of our subscription is B2B.
And I think that would be interesting maybe for everyone to really understand what you mean by subscription, what is what kind of pricing, what is your offering, because
I think when we started subscription, our focus was B2B but not B2C. And how we trying to sell subscription is to grab the seasonal demand first. And also after the pandemic, a lot of company doesn't need to prepare or give the car to each employees or to each managers, because they are working from home some days in a week, and that's one thing. And also we can promote the parking spaces as a package, and then we targeting the companies close to the parking garages and approach to them one by one at the beginning. And then we explain how many cars you have, how many parking fee you are paying. If you subscribe us our car, for example, two cars, well then you have free access to 50 parking garages in Stockholm. And you can calculate how much you can save the cost, and so on.
And people, employees can, and the vehicles are being shared within the company, right? So
yes, of course. Yeah.
It's basically a private fleet.
Yeah.
Being shared within the company.
Yeah. Success factor of this subscription is two things: one is parking, and another one is your systems, like sharing functions and keyless functions. That's good for the B2B customers.
So it's essentially setting up a like you said, a dedicated fleet of vehicles for that company,
but it's shared
amongst employees, and it's paid for on a subscription basis.
Yeah. And then price is not cheap, compared with the other competitor, almost same level or a bit higher. I don't want to compete with the prices. Yeah.
Do you have dedicated staff that are going after this B2B segment?
Yeah, we started from one sales staff, but then, once we find the demand, to every month we like get 20 new subscriptions, then it's not possible to manage only one person. Now we hire additional 3 sales. Yeah, and in total we have 4 staffs for the sales now. Yeah.
And so so when I sign up with your subscription, I commit to 8 months, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, or
it's a 1 month.
So it's 1 month.
1 month and renewed every month. And you can get a car today, for example, you know. We have free floating operations, so we can pick up car today and deliver the car to you today. That's also, you know, good for them. And then once they subscribe, they forget to terminate, you know. The sum of the customers already more than, I think, 6-7 months, you know, keep subscribing our services. Yeah.
For anyone that has an Amazon Prime membership that you haven't used in a while, just keep that in mind.
EV is also, you know, one of the factors, you know. They want to, even company wants to buy the EVs, but because, or at least the EVs, but because of current, you know, delivery lead time, takes 1 year, you know, until you get the EVs. But if you subscribe our service, you know, then you can get the EVs today. It's up. If you want to share the our car within the employees, so each employee needs to register the app.
Okay. Is it the same app?
It's the same app. Yeah.
Free for you. So every time, like I finish my reservation, it's only available to the staff in my company. It doesn't go to the regular pool.
No. Yeah. It's a private function.
Yeah, essentially doing dedicated fleets.
Then we have chance to promote those employees to use free floating as well.
Yeah. Are you able to measure that? Because of course that's interesting. If the guy who uses corporate, the dedicated fleet, can also be a public user for the free floating service, that's perfect.
Not so many so far, yeah. Not so many. Yeah. I hope to increase
I think the way that they're you're essentially deploying these as dedicated fleets or I should say dedicated services in the Vlog environment, so they can essentially create a service in the Vlog back office, dedicate a vehicle to that fleet, and then hand that over to the company for them to use, dedicated for that group of employees.
When you have a subscription like that for a company, do you see a good rate of use by the employees of the company? Because sometimes we are working with some companies who offer discounts, for example, and it's really hard to get them to download the app to use it, even though it's free for them. We have special like guidelines or
Yeah, you know, our subscription service is I don't charge the fee from each trip, but the fixed fee to the company, charged to the company. So like, you know, if we give you one car, then, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know, €1,000, but then employee can free to use. That's the reason why I think we have no issues on those kind of things.
In addition to what you're doing, we're doing quite a similar thing in other cities in Sweden, but we're building a script right now so that the dedicated service could be open as a station-based service for consumers during evenings and weekends. So I don't know how it works, but the script will go into the office and open up the service during like 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
So flipping it from a public facing service and then Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 type,
dedicating
it back to the companies.
That's a request we had from some large companies who have their own fleet, so we just come with the equipment, but they want to optimize their fleet, so rent their fleet during weekends or nights to B2C customers, so they want to play both.